Hello, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Not sure if Tim's going to be available tonight, Tim Kearns. I'm still waiting to hear from Tim, but we will be talking to a couple of guests this evening, as we usually do. And, of course, we'll have our basketball insider, Mike Grenier, coming up in about half an hour from now. Lots to talk about in the sports world, of course. Some very strange goings-on in the professional side of things. And before we bat that around a little bit, going to mention that Mark Leonard will be our guest in a few moments here. He is the high school hockey coach at Essex Tech. And what's interesting, in Division III, in the MIAA Division III boys hockey power rankings, well, in fact, in all of Massachusetts, there are two unbeaten teams left. And both of those are in Division III, and both of them are a few miles apart here on the North Shore. They are Linfield, with a record of 11-0-1. They are, in the most recent rankings, which came out on January 27, they're ranked number one, with a record, again, 11-0-1. North Shore, Essex Tech, they're 13-0-1, and Coach Mark Leonard's team is at number five. We've already posted our interview with Linfield coach John Gardner today, as Linfield has won their second Cape Ann League Kinney title in a row, and they're just sailing right along, and again, ranked number one in D3. And we're going to be talking to the other state's, the state's other unbeaten coach, and that is Mark Leonard, in just a little while. So really exciting stuff going on in our local hockey. Boys hockey division. Well, there's a lot going on in all of our sports. Bill Newell, of course, covering basketball for us. And by the way, the North Shore, or check it, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast will drop tomorrow morning at around 8 o'clock or so. Bill Newell hosting that. And, of course, he'll have Phil Stacey, the executive sports writer of the Salem Evening News, Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor, Nick Giannino, who is a sports writer for the Salem News, and Nick Kukuru, who is the Gloucester Times sports editor. So they'll all be on with Bill Newell tomorrow at about 8 o'clock. So you want to take a look at that. I think Tim is here. Are you here, Tim?
I'm here, Rick. All right. I'm here.
Where are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you are there. Good. All right. Good evening. Tim Kearns is here. And, Tim, I was just going over the fact that we have two unbeaten high school hockey teams in Massachusetts on the boys' side. They're both in Division III, and they're both on the North Shore. One is Linfield coach John Gardner, whom we just talked with a little while ago. That interview was posted. And Mark Leonard is the other unbeaten coach. Essex Tech is unbeaten at 13-0-1. So we're going to have Mark Leonard on here in a few minutes. But, Coach, I want to ask you about, did you watch the Cincinnati-Kansas City game?
Yeah, I did.
What was that play where it was third and long, and late in the game, Cincinnati stopped Kansas City, and the officials gave Kansas City a do-over, and they got the first down? What was that all about?
Yeah, well, the officials said that the clock was wrong, and he was blowing his whistle to stop the play, but nobody obviously heard him, though. If you watch a couple minutes later, they did show a replay that had one of the backfield officials running towards the line of scrimmage, waving his arms, and then suddenly stopped when the play began. And Romo said he probably stopped because they didn't want to get caught in the middle of the play. And so the play went on, and of course, Cincinnati got a sack on that play. And then the referee came in and said, okay, it's going to be a no play, it's going to be a do-over, because the clock wasn't correct. So, you know, they end up getting screwed on that as a result of the ensuing play. Because that's where Mahomes runs out of bounds, gets the show from behind, you got the unnecessary roughness call, and they get 15 more yards to kick the winning field goal. So there's a lot of people yelling for the scalps of the officials due to that play and several others that they found questionable during the course of the game that always seemed to favor Kansas City. So, I don't know. It was a wacky play. The penalty itself was not a smart move on the part of the Cincinnati defender. I know you're caught up in the moment, but again, you got to realize where you are and the player that you're chasing is. Mahomes was clearly out of bounds when he gives them the shove. And of course, as Johnny Most would say, he gave it the old Spanoslavski and made it look a whole lot worse than it was, and he got the flag.
I don't have any problem with that call. I think that was just a very poor play by the Cincinnati defender.
It was stupid, but I mean, Mahomes really added.
Well, yeah, you know, look at soccer players, you know. So, I've never seen anything like that do-over. That was the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
That was just really strange. And everybody's, I mean, like, what are you doing? It was just so bizarre. And the other bizarre one, I think, that's kind of funny, I guess, is, LeBron James is probably the most gifted basketball player in history. Gonna break all kinds of scoring records. Number one scorer of all time. Not the number one champion. We all know who that is. He comes from Boston and he wore number six. But the crybaby thing, Tim. I mean, you know, he didn't get a call. Okay, that was a poor call. The officials admit it that they missed it. At the end of the game, when was that? Sunday? Saturday night? Saturday night against, Lakers against Celtics. But he cried about it. He goes on social media, complains. It's the refs against the Lakers. It's the world against the Lakers. Nobody gets calls like that. I watch all the game. Why is he such a crybaby? He had 5 minutes to win the game in overtime.
The thing if it is a guy like him is they've never committed a foul. And how many times has he cried when he's had a foul called against him? And it's to me it just pisses you off when he suddenly doesn't get a call and he's on the floor, you know, kicking his feet, pounding his hand. It's like get up and play the game. You know, nobody's interested in this kind of a display by the supposed quote unquote greatest player ever. You know, so moves like that just really pissed me off.
Yeah, I thought I
have sympathy for him. I'm glad when he loses because he's so ungracious when he wins.
You know, it's funny. I was just trying to start to get to like the guy because of the good work that he does with his charities and so on. But I can't like him. He's not likable at all.
No, there's a certain element of gracefulness that comes with being a champion football player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we certainly have seen our share of great champions, be it Bill Russell, Larry Bird. As much as he trash talked on the court, it stayed between him and the guy that was standing in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't take it off the court, except in one particular instance that I can remember. After they beat the Houston Rockets in the finals, because I was there when he said these words. But Bobby Orr, you know, the greatest hockey player ever, up there with Gordie Howe, and who truly redefined the game. You never heard a word out of that guy's mouth during the course of a game, of a season, you know, and you know. LeBron is like, oh, poor me, oh, my poor team, oh, this, everybody's against us. Well, you know, when you create a situation where people want to be against you, you got to live with it.
Good point. Good point. And, you know, it boggles my mind that guys like that do things like that and, you know, just go on and cry about it. And I was surprised the Celtics won. I think I left the game in the fourth quarter, and I was surprised when they ended up winning that game because they did not play well, and they haven't played well for the last few games. But we'll talk more about that later with Mike Grenier at the bottom of the hour. Now, let's see. Do I have any other things I wanted to mention about? Oh, yeah, one other thing, Coach, I want to mention. I don't know about you, but I know E.J. Perry up in Andover, and we know that he's good friends with Bill O'Brien. And I don't know about you, but I'm really happy that Bill O'Brien is coming back to the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. I kept waiting for the moment when he was going to get fired, you know, and or decided to leave, because you knew Belichick was going to go through. He's going to go through the motions. He's going to interview a lot of guys, you know, and then he was going to drag Bill through the door. Bill already had 1 foot in the door. He already had the nameplate on a desk, and they were just waiting to actually just confirm the deal. Everybody in the NFL and in the whole sporting world knew that Bill O'Brien was coming back because, you know, they had a great deal of success while he was the offensive coordinator. So,
yeah,
you know, and I think that Mac is going to have a resurgent year next year because he's going to have somebody who actually knows what he's doing. Being not only his offensive coordinator, but his quarterback coach.
See, you know, and there's another difference, too. I'm reading a lot of the sports writers are criticizing Mac Jones, and a lot of the athletes are saying he's young, he's brand new, he should keep his mouth shut. I don't agree. You know what? I remember when I was a rookie teacher, Tim, there was an advisor, an administrator trying to dole out some really poor advice. And, you know, I just, it's wrong. I mean, you know, there's right and there's wrong. And I think Mac Jones has been wronged for the most part. And the thing is, he's kept it between him and the coaches, although it's been demonstrated on the field, but it's been person to person. None of the coaches have bad-mouthed anybody else or each other or Mac Jones, publicly. So, we'll see what happens. And from all accounts, Mr. O'Brien has got quite a temper too.
Yeah. Well, you want somebody like that. But his temper is going to come from the fact that, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's been there. He's filled that role. He's had success. So you're going to listen to him, and you're going to do it. He's going to do it his way. And that's the way he wants it done. And if you do it that way, then you're going to get results.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, I'll tell you. And let me see. Super Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks. We can talk about that later. Philadelphia and Kansas City. Of course, with my Philadelphia connections, I got to be rooting for the Eagles. So I have to. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Mark Leonard, the hockey coach at Essex Tech. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back now. Let me just turn off the music over here on that computer. Want to be saying hello to Mark Leonard, the hockey coach at Essex Tech. And Mark, first of all, congratulations! What a season so far.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride, that's for sure. Still got a lot of work to do, but so far there's not a lot to complain about.
You know, I was talking about with Tim Kearns before we got you on here, and it's a fact that there are two unbeaten teams left in the state. And you guys are just a few miles from each other, you and Linfield. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, I know those guys well. They're a real good team. And, you know, maybe we'll meet up in the tournament. Who knows? You just never know.
Well, at the moment, the most recent rankings, Linfield number one, and you guys are at number five. And you've been climbing the ranks steadily, getting some respect. Let's go back and take a look at your most recent game, if you would, please, Coach, because you have been piling up some tremendous offensive numbers, and then you face Lowell Catholic, a very tough team. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. We didn't score many goals, and it was a struggle to beat them, but it was one of the better games we played all season, to be honest with you. I mean, we outshot them 38-16.
Whoa.
We had a million opportunities. They have a freshman goalie who's really tremendous. He was on his game, and he made things very difficult for us. But, you know, as far as our forecheck and our in-zone play, we only gave up 16 shots, and we had a lot of pressure on them. Kids worked hard. and we just couldn't score. You know, their goalie, sometimes you have to tip your hat to the other team, and their goalie was great. But, you know, like we've done all year, we've been down a few times in games this year. North Reading, we were down, and Marblehead. Our kids just don't give up. And you know, we tied it up in the third, and it was 0-0 after two, and they scored first, and then we tied it up and had some chances. They had a couple chances. Our goalie, Kyle Mahan, made some great saves, too. Even though he didn't have a lot of shots, he made some quality saves.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we were fortunate to get a goal in overtime and to keep the streak going.
Coach, Tim Krantz here.
Hi, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing real well. Congratulations on the season so far.
Thank you.
A question. What role does having your own rink play in the team's mindset and their comfort level? Because you don't have to get on buses every day. The kids don't have to get in cars and pack all this stuff up, travel to a rink, and even for the games, they go into a familiar spot.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, you know, the best thing is we have our own locker room there, and the kids can, you know, leave their equipment there. They don't have to lug it back and forth every day. It's a great rink. You know, we're very comfortable there. The kids walk. A lot of the kids that don't drive, they just walk up the top of the hill after school and get to the rink, and it's great. And, you know, we're starting to really get a lot of fans. We're getting a lot of kids from the school, which is great. So it's great. I couldn't be happier with our rink.
I don't know what your lines are, Coach. I don't have that, but I do know that you've got two guys who have scored in the 30s so far. One is your captain, and one is Logan Casey and Brady Leonard. Tell me about those two guys as goal scorers and how they move the puck around.
Yeah, you know, they're both very gifted players. They both have tremendous hands. They can skate. They see the ice very well. They're on two different lines, which is great. It's not just one line scoring. Logan plays with one of our seniors, Larry Graffio. He's on the left wing, and Anthony Bresenti's, who's a sophomore, in the middle. They move the puck tremendously well. They're really good down low with give and goes and stuff. And then on Brady's line, you have a junior, Chris Maher, who's, you know, we call him the magician. He's, you wouldn't think the puck stays with him somehow. I don't know how he does it. You think he's going to lose it and it stays with him. And he's really a setup man. And then on the right wing, is Jaden Vargas, a sophomore from, Peabody. And he's got tremendous speed. And Brady is, in the middle. And, you know, they, again, Brady and Jaden have been playing together since they're about 8 years old. So they know each other very well. And, when you have two balanced lines, it really makes it great. And our third line is contributing as well. I mean, Brian Swayzik's on the third line. He's a senior. He's got four goals, and we got a couple freshmen. Teddy Tesoris has got three goals, and Ben Rahal's got a couple goals. So it's not just coming from those two.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden, who plays with Brady, has got 20 points. Chris has 19 points. Mahar, Bresenti, and Graffio both have 14 points playing with Logan Casey. So, you know, they move it around well, and they're unselfish. And, you know, it's great to have them on different lines. It's not just one line doing it for us.
I want to ask one more question before I turn it back to Tim. Excuse me, Tim. Your defense, defenseman Armani Booth, he's up there in double figures as well, 8-8. Is he sort of a quarterback there, you know, getting the puck out of the zone type, a kid who can move it out sort of by himself?
Yeah, he has a big shot. He can skate. He's got great hands. And he's five of his goals are on the power play. We're doing really well on the power play. We're 16 for 40 for 40%. So we've scored 16 power play goals.
Yeesh.
He's 6'3". He's 220. But he can skate, and he's got hands. And he's starting to figure out that he can be a very physical player. And he's got a bomber for a shot, a wrist shot. So he's been getting a lot of goals, which is nice. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 goals from a defenseman is terrific.
Hey, Coach, we talked to one of the kids from St. John's Prep last week, and I asked him about. I noticed this at St. John's, and almost in all the sports historically, starts off a little sluggishly, and then all of a sudden they get into gear, and they just basically run the table the rest of the way. And I always ask people from the prep about that. He gave me the best explanation. He says it's because they've got so many kids coming from different places, that really aren't familiar with each other, and it takes them a little bit of time to find that comfort zone. Because you draw from so many different areas, do you have that same experience where there's an initial, like meet and greet with the kids where they have to sort of find themselves and find that flow working together where they don't have a lot of opportunity, outside of school to get playing time and play together and become familiar with each other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, when I coached at Peabody, you know, I knew everybody coming up for the next 5 or 6 years, you know. At Essex, sort of like the prep, you don't really know year to year what you're going to get, you know. But when you find out who's coming to the school, you know, the kids go to camps together. They play in summer leagues and fall leagues, and they do the preseason skates together. So they get to know each other. You know, this year we had, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 freshmen that made it, so it takes them a little bit while to adjust. But, you know, honestly, today there's so many different tournament, summer tournament teams and showcase teams, and a lot of these kids have actually played together before, which I think helps. We also go on an overnight trip preseason every year that we, you know, before the season starts, and we get to have some good bonding time. We do a lot of team stuff, and it comes quick. You know, they get to know each other pretty quick when they're skating together and sweating together, and I think they figure out, you know, pretty soon that they, you know, who they like and who they want to bond with and all the stuff like that.
We're coming into February, stretch run coming up, you've got, I don't want to look too far ahead. I know coaches don't do that, but in high school you sort of have to look at your schedule. You got Northeast Tech this week, and I'll ask you about them in a second, on Wednesday. That's a home game, and then a huge home game on Saturday. So what's the plan this week, Mark? And as I ask that, most coaches will just say, well, we have to just take care of ourselves.
Yeah, you know, we're in a great spot now with that victory over Lowell Catholic, who's now in our league. So basically we control our own destiny. You know, if we beat Northeast and we beat Shawshin, we'll be league champs. No one will be able to catch us. So we're in a good spot as far as that goes. Now, again, Northeast plays us tough. They do every time. And Shawshin, obviously, they're our huge rival. So that's not going to be an easy game. So we got to stay focused. You know, we had a good game against Lowell Catholic. We had a real good practice today. We'll have a good pregame skate tomorrow, and hopefully we'll come out flying Wednesday. We want to win for the seniors. It's our senior night. And then hopefully that carries over into the Shawshin game. So it's a huge week for us.
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Okay. Okay. We got to have signal somehow. We need the Zoom thing so we can see each other. Mark, staying on that point for one more minute, you've played both of these teams already this season. What does that mean in rematches?
You know, I'm not sure it means a lot because, for example, last year we played Northeast. We played them the first game of the early in the year. We beat them 9-0. And then, you know, we played them the second time, and they actually beat us in overtime because, you know, we kind of thought we just had to show up to win, and they came out flying, and we were flat, and they beat us. So, you know, from game to game, they're high school kids. You don't know if they're going to be up or down. One thing I will say about my kids, though, that they've been up for pretty much every game. We've had a few bad periods here and there, but, you know, they give a pretty good effort game after game, and it's not going to get any easier, no matter who we play. We're undefeated, and everyone wants to beat the undefeated team, you know. So we're going to have to be on our game to beat both teams. And Shawshin is always tough. They, you know, if they can beat us, they could be, you know, they could still be league champs. And so there's a lot riding on it. As good as our season has gone, we really haven't guaranteed anything yet for ourselves. So.
Yeah, it's,
we want to keep playing well and have a good week.
It's kind of weird when you go this far unbeaten and you still have major challenges ahead. So the boys have got to stay focused, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's what you want. You want to have tough games going into the tournament, and hopefully you're playing your best hockey. And you know, we try to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Mark, always great talking with you and sharing that information and knowledge with us. We appreciate it. We wish you well, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach. Take care.
Bye.
That is Essex Tech hockey coach Mark Leonard, successful for so many years over in Peabody, where Linfield, that's their home rink as well, at the McVan. And, of course, it's 5 or 6 years now, I think, Tim, at Essex Tech. I believe he's been there a while.
Yeah, well, you know, time flies when you're having fun, with the new school, the new rink, it puts a whole other air of excitement for the kids, not only the students but the athletes that play for the school.
Well, I know he's happy over there, and it's a fantastic facility, both the sports center and the school itself. They have state-of-the-art everything, and as a public school teacher we used to have a really great vocational program. Not that it's not great now, but it was so extensive back in the day, and then budget cuts sort of decimated it, and it's just I'm kind of jealous that Essex Tech has all the good stuff and the kids who go there really get the benefit of that good stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure. And Gloucester has had their own hockey rink, the tank, and everybody talks how tough it is to go and play there. And the kids certainly, from Gloucester, certainly buy into that aspect. And it gives them an aura, I won't say of invincibility, but certainly an aura that more than likely they're going to be very successful when people come to town.
Yeah, and speaking of Gloucester, they're 7-4 right now, I think, 7-4-2, something like that. So, they have really come on strong lately, and we'll have to talk to Coach Geary very soon. If not this week, then next week for sure. I got to put him on my list of coaches to call. So much stuff going on, so much good stuff. There are the girls' hockey is doing fantastic. There are tremendous basketball teams in the area, in all divisions. It's just great to be learning and dealing with so much of that stuff. We've got Mike Grenier coming up in a minute to talk about the Celtics. And then don't forget that the Sports Desks programs will be here on Thursday, the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, with Nick and Nick, Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukuru, and they will be dropping Thursday, and they have tremendous information about high school sports in the area as well. Lots of features and tremendous amounts of, why am I using the word tremendous amount? Plenty of information, plenty of statistics, and good talk. All right, let's take a break. And then we'll come back and we'll chat some basketball with Mike Grenier. We're going to get his view on the LeBron non-call, I guess, and maybe the Celtics slipping a little bit before they did beat the Lakers, and other stuff as well. He's going to have his Power Five and also a report card, I think. We'll find out about that in just a few minutes. So, again, stay with us, please. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore with great local sports coverage. Live play-by-play football, Monday night sports night show, the game night football show, feature spotlight interviews with coaches and players, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, and joining us this fall, Nick and Nick in the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making connections that support the North Shore.
And we are back live. Well, yeah, we're back live. I push the button twice, and you go on once, you come off once. All right. Welcome back to Mike Grenier. He's our very own basketball insider. Tim Kearns is here. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer, and Bill Newell working back at Scoreboard Central as we speak. And I know that you have a lot you want to talk about, Mike. And
sure.
But I want to start us off with Tim and I were discussing LeBron. We want your opinion.
My goodness. Was that a hot button issue Saturday night and then Sunday, obviously? It was all over social media. I thought maybe the world was exploded or something, and we were all ducking for cover. But my take on this is LeBron, obviously threw an incredible tantrum after he got fouled by Tatum. But if you look at the video, which is out there in 1 million websites right now, he traveled. So long before Tatum fouled him, he traveled. It's very obvious he took four steps on the way to the basket. Now maybe he felt entitled because he's never called for traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks gets away with traveling 5 or 6 times per game. But no one calls upon it, and that's why he's such a frightening force. But LeBron traveled. But regarding the tantrum, I think my wife said it as well as anybody. She said, Mike, if that had happened to Grant Williams, if he threw a tantrum like that, he would have been ejected right away.
Oh, good point.
And they would have slapped him with a technical.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So my take on it is that, yeah, LeBron was expecting a call. He should have gotten a call, but he would not have gotten a call if he'd been called properly for traveling. So that preceded the foul. So he really had nothing to complain about. I'd say if he looks at the balance sheet over the last 18 or 19 years, he's gotten a lot more calls than he's been denied calls. So I think he has to move on, and I think some of this has to do with the fact that the Lakers are in 13th place, and they're on the verge of beating the Celtics, who have the best record in the NBA, and they badly need, you know, the Lakers badly need every win to try to possibly make the playoffs later this season. So I think that's part of it. He's so competitive, he wants to win. But he did travel, and sorry, they made the call they did, and the tantrum was not very becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, what did you guys think of it?
Well, you know, I expressed a very similar thought that you just did, Mike. And, I said, you know, we've had champions here, many of whom have been considered among the greatest who ever played the game. And you'd never see an outburst like that from them, from Bill Russell,
yep.
Bobby Orr. You know, yeah, it's get a little crazy when he covered the plate with
sure.
Dirk.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
one
yeah.
Memorable game. You know, he picked up a page and throwing it. But I mean, you know, LeBron just thinks everything should go his way every single time. Like you said, he never travels. He never commits a foul. You
right.
know,
right.
He gets fouled every time he goes to the hoop. You watch his facial expressions. You'd think they were sticking him with 1,000 blades every time he went down the court.
Right,
and it's
right.
like, stop it. If you're as good as you are, just play the game. And I think it's disgusted a lot of people, and it makes a lot of people anti-LeBron, and he can't understand why that is.
Correct. Yeah, I agree totally, Tim. And I think he went that extra mile in that game by stomping and getting on the floor and stomping the floor with his fist and looking like someone had robbed his home, you know, and it was such a bad optic, bad visual. And Rick, we talk about this all the time. What do kids 14, 15, 16, my own nephew plays for Central Catholic, he's a junior, he's 6 foot, what does a kid like that or any basketball player on the North Shore think when they see LeBron getting away with a tantrum and being on the floor? Maybe they say, oh, when I'm playing for Ipswich High and Danvers and all, maybe I can do the same thing. The rest won't call me. They didn't call. You know, LeBron for it. It's okay to do it. It's a
hey,
bad.
Mike,
look, yes.
Later in the game, you saw that kid walk up to the ref with a camera and go, "Look here, I got fouled." And the beautiful. And the guy teed him up, which I thought was great.
Patrick Beverly. Yes.
You're going to walk onto the court and try to upstage the referee by showing, "Here's the camera. Look at here's the picture." Come on.
Right. Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Out of the game.
Oh, yeah, Patrick Beverly is known to do that kind of stuff. He's a real chippy player. I've known about him for many years. That's the way he plays. But to do that in front of a national television audience and a crowd at the Garden and showing up a referee, he got slapped with a technical, but he should have been gone. And, again,
yep.
I think the league office should have said, okay, you're suspended for whatever it be, 2 games, 3 games, you know, 1 game, whatever. You got to send a message if you're the NBA office, because you just can't tolerate that kind of trash showing up a referee. And same as way, we can't really tolerate LeBron getting on the floor and pounding the floor and all that stuff. When, yeah, he's in the heat of the moment, but he's old enough to know that that's not a good thing for the NBA. It's not a good thing for basketball. And he considers himself a role model, rightfully so, because he's done a lot of great things. However, he's not going to win over any new fans by doing that. And it's just a bad message to send to high school kids, college kids, anybody that likes basketball. No one gave him a T, and yet if he really had deep down had to watch the film and say, oh, my God, I did travel on that play. Yes, I did travel. And, you know, really, that was not called. So, he should take it as, okay, at least they didn't call me for traveling. But, you know, they have to move on and win a lot of games to make the playoffs. And the Celtics, they badly needed that game because they had lost three in a row.
All right, let's get to that. They slipped, and I don't think they played that well against Los Angeles.
No, they did not.
I asked you for the report card, and I just wonder what your assessment is now. I mean, you know, it's an 82-game season. I don't know how you can maintain the intensity 48 minutes every single game, although I think you can compete, you know, every single game. But you can't. Your 100% tonight might not be your 100% tomorrow night. So,
correct.
It
happens to every team, too, you know?
Yeah, so where are we with the Celtics?
Where are we with the Celtics? Do you want the Power Five or just a general thought? Well, a couple of things. I did go to I want to bring up Robert Williams' name here in the context of I went to Thursday night's Knicks game when they lost in overtime, okay? And I was sitting in a good position not far from the basket, and there was a play in the third quarter or fourth quarter when Tatum gave him a lob pass, and it wasn't a dunk. He just sort of – Robert Williams just guided the ball in, okay?
Yep. I saw that.
He came down a little bit gimpy.
Hmm.
And I came home, like midnight or whatever, and I said to my wife, I'll predict that Robert Williams will not play against the Los Angeles Lakers on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he didn't play. I'm concerned about him because he's only played, he came to the team later in the season this year because he was still recovering from last year's injury. But he's only played 17 games. And Tim, how frustrating, and Rick, how frustrating is it to see him play two games in a row or three games in a row and then miss two in a row or miss play one, then not be available for another? And the long term, like you said, Rick, you can't have that intensity 48 minutes for 82 games a year. However, Robert Williams strikes me as a guy who, for all his ability, and he's still a very young guy, I don't know that we can count on him to be a consistent contributor in the playoffs. We're talking when they play a tough six or seven game series with the 76ers or the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference or the Miami Heat, and then stretch that out to play a Western Conference team if they make the finals. I think it's a legitimate question. Will he be available and can he be productive? Because his injuries seem to just add up and keep mounting. It's been chronic, and he just hasn't shown us that he can consistently get on the court. I don't know. Do you guys get concerned about that?
You know, Bill Walton in 1986 played in 80 of 82 games.
Yep.
All right, and this is a guy with notoriously bad feet. He was on the tail end of his career. This kid is at the beginning of his career, and he can't stay healthy. He can't be relied upon to give you night after night contributions. And they're not looking for 50 minutes. They're not looking for 25 minutes. They're looking for minutes. And you can't give it to them.
Right,
But, Mike, are they erring too much on the side of caution in protect him and keeping him out of games, which in some instances is going to cost them games?
Right. That's a legitimate question, Tim, because we don't know how the Celtics medical staff feels about that. It's all, private and all that, the extent of his injury and how bad the injuries are. And, we know that Robert Williams, when he's on the court, he gives you everything he has. He's diving for loose balls. He closes out on three-point shooters. He makes steals. He's all over the place. And he plays a lot of heart. However, then the next game he's out. So, to me, he's a huge question mark. And I think if they have a long-term goal of winning this thing, of winning the entire thing, they have to be able to count on Robert Williams, because you can't ask Hal Horford to be playing 34, 35 minutes a game in the playoffs. You just can't. Horford has held up remarkably well, I think, for a guy who was 36 years old. And he had a couple of defensive performances. I knocked his defense a couple of weeks ago, thought it was slipping, but my goodness, he had a couple of great defensive games in games that he really needed. And he's still playing really outstanding ball for a guy who's 36. And he's playing 31, 32 minutes a game. And we can't get Robert Williams out there for 24, 25 minutes a game or playing consecutive games. Rick, I know you like Robert Williams a lot, but it's just, I think, a legitimate point that needs to be brought out. He's only played 17 games, and we don't know from game to game if he's going to be announced as in the starting lineup or as announced as a not available tonight.
Well, I'm hoping Tim's theory that they're, erring on the side of caution is right, because you're right. You know that. You see him in a game playing outrageously good and all over the place, you know he's not going to be playing in the next game. But let me ask you, you texted me about the minutes that Jason Tatum is piling up. Now, it goes down the line. They've had guys out. They've had some injuries, but not too many. But the fact when you're relying on a starter like Williams who doesn't show up and Horford has to play those minutes, is there a domino effect that requires Tatum to play so many minutes?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of that. There's no question about it. But when I look at it, and I kind of like lately, especially in some of those games that like we felt the Celtics needed to win, like even the overtime game against the Knicks or that the game against Golden State where he played like 50 minutes or more in that Golden State game. He's averaging, Pascal Siakam of Toronto is averaging 37.7 minutes per game. And Jason Tatum is like at 37.6. We're just talking a fraction here. Probably a few seconds per game that separates the top 2 minutes played guys. And I think we can talk all we want about Jason Tatum's durability. And he's played in 48 games. He's only missed a couple games this season. And we can see his productivity hasn't dropped off. However, when we're talking 82 games plus the playoffs, when is he going to get tired? When is even though he's age 24, when you're taking it to the basket and you're trying to draw fouls, and sometimes the refs call it, you're getting pounded physically whether you're drawing the foul or not. And when you take that over the course of 82 games, you're going to get those little nagging injuries, and Tatum can play through that because he's still only 24 years old. But I just worry or get concerned that the cumulative effect of all the minutes he plays is going to hurt him in some way in the playoffs, meaning, maybe he takes too many threes in the playoffs because he doesn't want to drive because he doesn't want to get banged up, or maybe his shooting percentage dropped off because there's a little bit of fatigue that shows come March or April and into the playoffs. So I think it's a legitimate thing. And by the way, Jaylen Brown is 11th in the league in minutes played, which is pretty high. He's averaging 36 minutes per game. Hmm. So, oddly enough, Tim and Rick, Kyrie Irving plays the third most minutes of anybody in the league. The third most minutes, right behind Tatum. And he's obviously an older guy, but he's playing outrageously good right now. However, it's been pointed out that he is in a contract year, meaning he's trying to win that last contract that he'll probably have as an NBA player in his 30s. He wants a whopping contract next year. So I noticed that he's been quiet about everything. He's not attacking any religious groups or anything like that. He's playing strictly basketball. He's playing good basketball, and he's up there in minutes played. But we don't care about the Brooklyn Nets. We care about the Celtics. So I'm concerned about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown's minutes, and I just hope that it doesn't impact them as we get down to the 60th game of the year, 75th game of the year, and then the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike, they're too young and should be in such good shape that those minutes shouldn't be a factor. That their body should be able to recover, and they should be able to go out there and do it again. We shouldn't be thinking, they can't play 40 minutes because Larry Bird wasn't discussing, I gotta hold off at 32 minutes a game because I gotta be fresh. You know, those guys didn't hold back and they were very, very successful. And you wouldn't, looking at them, you wouldn't say that Larry Bird was in better shape than those two guys.
No way. Right.
No way.
he'd play every game.
And yep, played, exactly. Yeah.
And he played deep minutes.
Oh yeah, I know, but I just think that like even a guy like Tatum, and he doesn't want to, he never wants out of a game. I mean, whether you're watching him on TV or at the Garden, he never wants out of a game. He wants to play. But my thought is that I think it's just a factor that could affect him and the Celtics as they go down the line. And if they're still playing, hopefully in June, I don't like to see him playing 37, 38 minutes a game. You know, whether it is a factor down the line remains to be seen, but I just pointed out because he is basically right up there in minutes played, and Jaylen Brown's also up there in minutes played at the number 11 spot. It's something to be concerned about, even though that, you know, these guys are, you know, particularly Brown and Tatum are in that 24, 25, 26 age group. So, we'll see. Yeah. I just bring it up because I think he's playing a lot of minutes, and you wonder, okay, can they be? Of course, Joe Mazzulla has to be the guy.
Well, you guys have both done some coaching the last couple of years with the Celtics, and it's been spot on. I was just going to ask you now, is this something that you would advise Coach Mazzulla in your assistant coaching capacity? Say, look,
you know what, Rick? I'm sure all the metrics and analytics around these days, he's more than aware of it.
Okay, because I was going to say, you know, is it better to sacrifice a game or two here and there and give these guys a break, get the other guys involved, so that you have a little bit fresher legs at the end, but you don't have that stellar record? Is that the thing?
I think that's a legitimate, Rick, that's a great point. I do think it's okay to sacrifice a game or two. Say there are 4.5 games up in first place and, you know, they have 10 games to go and it looks like home court advantage is going to be happening for the Celtics. Then I say, okay, let's sit Jason Tatum down for a game, two games. Let's sit Jaylen Brown down for a game or two, just to freshen up and all that stuff. Tim points out that Bird never wants to come out. Same thing with Tatum. He doesn't want to come out. But if you have to sacrifice a game or two in the long run, I think that's okay, because right now, at this point, you know, they're still leading the East by three games, and we got to talk about Philly, by the way they're playing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I think it's okay to sacrifice a game or two, you know, and sit those guys out for one or two games. I don't mean five games or six games or anything like that, but a game or two. Maybe one in March, maybe one in April, one a month, you know, even something like that, especially when you're playing back-to-backs, which happens a lot these days. I mean, obviously they automatically sit Horford down on the back second game of back-to-back nights. They do that a lot. And Tatum isn't asking for that. You're going to need him on the nights that Horford isn't available. But maybe there's a game against a lesser team in the NBA, one of the bottom feeders, and you say, okay, maybe we can get by with Jason sitting it out or playing like 22, 25 minutes or something like that.
Yep.
You know, it's just a point. I don't know. Maybe it's a weak point, but I just noticed that he's playing a lot of minutes, and I don't like it, you know, personally.
Let's get to the power points.
Okay. You want a power five?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. All right, we're going to go with I'm going to go still with the one of my favorite teams. I like them. I still think they're going to be there in the long run, the Memphis Grizzlies in the number five spot.
Okay, yep.
Then I'm going to go with Milwaukee, which is coming on strong, at the number four spot. I think they certainly have room to grow and get to the top two or three. Because I tell you what, I watched him last night, and Giannis is healthy again after missing six or seven games. He had 50 points last night. He had 29 at the half. He was he sort of reminded you of Shaq at his peak, in that he's such a powerful physical player. You can't stop him when he, like Tim has pointed out, he takes two steps from the half court line, and he's into his, you know, power dunk, and he's just unstoppable. I mean, he. 50 points last night, so I got them at the number four spot. I got the Denver Nuggets, who have been really, really good overall throughout the season, at the number three spot. Philadelphia is the hottest team in the NBA. Embiid is having certainly an MVP, consider him MVP conversation season. They're in the number two spot, and I have to keep the Celtics at number one because they did bounce back and beat the Lakers, and I think overall they've been able to hold the lead when they have these mini slumps, and then they win, like, after they lost three or four in a row, they won nine in a row before they went through the recent skid. So I still have them up there in the number one spot. Sort of tentative because Philly's playing great, but I still have them at the number one spot. But I think Philly is really a team to watch. They're going to cause a lot of havoc, I think, in the playoffs. And, Rick, if I had to pick a team that's lurking outside the top five, and they're not even the top five in the Eastern Conference, that would be the Miami Heat. They're playing very well lately. Jimmy Butler's healthy again. And when you have three guys, we always talk about teams, when they have three good players, they're a threat to win some playoff series. And when you're talking Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, who's certainly a force in the middle, gets a lot of rebound, and Tyler Hero, who used to be a sixth man, but now he starts and he can get to 25, 30, 35 points in a game. When you have a big three like that, then even though they're lurking outside the top five, down the line, they could be troublesome in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mike, I was just looking at the standing, and the Celtics have been very consistent both home and away this season.
Yes.
In terms of record-wise, which bodes well. It means you can go on the road and be successful.
Yep, no question.
But again, you know, the Sixers, the Bucks, you run down through the Nuggets, who've been extremely successful at home.
Yep. Oh yeah. Memphis, Tim, is 21-3 at home.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So should they make the finals, they would be dangerous, you know. But go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, there are those two teams in particular, but there's a lot of balance between the teams this year. Not, you know, and I wish I had paid attention to the home and away over the last couple of years. But teams are going to fare very well when they have to travel once playoff season rolls around.
Right, right. And, you know, of course, you can't figure out, I think the biggest mystery, Tim, that would affect the Celtics here is the Brooklyn Nets, because sometimes they go on a tear and win five or six in a row, and then they'll lose inexplicably to Orlando, which, of course, the Celtics have lost three times to Orlando. They'll lose inexplicably to a bad team, and they'll look bad doing it. But, of course, Kevin Durant has been out a few weeks already, and he's going to be out another few weeks. Kyrie's carried them because Ben Simmons, again, is in street clothes lately. So they still have a pretty good record, and they're going to be a concern in the playoffs. But I don't see Brooklyn beating the Celtics in a seven-game series or beating Milwaukee in a seven-game series. I just don't see it. But they could stretch a series out and make it work six or seven games before you knock them out. Because when Durant comes back, he's going to be raring to go. And of course, Kyrie is really having a very good year.
I want to excuse me. I want to ask you a question about journalism, about sports journalism.
Go ahead.
What do you see at a game as opposed to when you're watching it on TV?
Oh, man, there's so much you see. It's funny because we mentioned Robert Williams, and I noticed in that Knicks game Thursday night that you see it on TV to a certain degree, but when Robert Williams gets the ball, he wants no part of it. Unless it's a dunk.
It's a hot potato, yeah.
Right? Rick, Timmy, he gets rid of the ball so quick. He's one of the best passers on the team. Because he gets rid of it faster than Patrick Mahomes.
Here, you take it.
You know? I'm thinking that the coaches told him what Jim Doherty told me when I played for Don Savio in high school. Give the ball to somebody who can shoot.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder why, again, I don't mean to come down so hard on Robert Williams tonight, but he had plenty of time off when he was injured or when he was rehabbing. So let's say, okay, how about a foul line jumper? How about a 12-foot jumper from the baseline, or from either baseline, or from the wing? I'm not talking three-pointers. Too many guys take three-pointers. He's not a three-point shooter, never will be. However, he can develop a shot that at least becomes a threat, because in that Knicks game, whoever was I noticed the Knicks players were playing in the paint when Robert Williams would be on the outside with the ball looking to pass some. They went within 10 or 12 or 15 feet of him. So, and he's got athletic skill. If he drove it to the basket, maybe he could score and draw a foul for a three-point play. But he gets rid of that ball in a snap. And sometimes it looks like they're playing 4-on-5. And, yes, he's valuable for the offensive rebounds or if somebody double-teams Tatum and he makes a dunk. But, you know, otherwise it looks like a liability when they're playing 4-on-5 because he's just getting rid of the ball so quickly. I don't know, that's just one quick way of looking at the game when you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You might not see on TV. And I tell you what, the other thing I noticed Thursday night as a journalist is Grant Williams had some bad moments where he lapsed on defense, and then, of course, he talks to the officials an awful lot. And Mazzulla called a timeout, and I specifically remember him, Mazzulla, practically running to the middle of the court. And he didn't grab Grant Williams, but he was chewing his ear out. at the beginning of a timeout because he felt that he was lacking focus or had messed up a defensive assignment. And those are the things that, like, you know, they may not accentuate on TV, but you see it when you're there. And the other thing I noticed, and I don't think this would have been played on TV, between the third and fourth quarter of that Knicks game, Grant Williams was out on the court. And it, as you know, with the TV timeouts, it's probably, Tim, 3 minutes before you get to the fourth quarter. He was out for the entire 3 minutes at the foul line talking to the official. And I'm going, for what purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Your 11 or 12, 13 or 14 other teammates are in on the bench listening to the coach. You're out there at the foul line defending your actions or pleading with the officials about something that may be irrelevant by now. And I'm thinking, that's not a good look either. So, you know, those are just the things that, like, I would pick up on when I covered games, and, you know, still picking up on that, because you say, what could he have been arguing about? And he should have been with his teammates listening to what should be going on in the fourth quarter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's the nature of the players today, Mike.
That's true.
You know?
That's true, because you would not have seen...
The older generation have no tolerance for antics like that, where, you know, young kids today think that as, oh, that's just part of the course. It's what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's a good point, Mike. You know, because when you go to a game, I often get distracted by people when I'm at a game.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
The people watching and the things that you have with your eyes that you can see, like as a coach, like when Tim goes to a game or something or other.
Yeah.
It's different than the guy who's sitting back on his couch, you know, having a beer and some popcorn watching the game. And
right.
I mean, like what you just told us about Grant Williams, I didn't know that, and that's important because it contributes to my understanding of how this team is being coached, actually.
Right. And I think overall, I think Missoula's doing a really nice job. And like I said, sure, I'm sure his assistant coaches know all about the minutes Jason Tatum is playing. And if Tatum, you know, spoke up, I'm sure Missoula would say, okay, we're going to rest you a little bit or something like that. But Tatum's a competitor. I mean, obviously, he's in the running for the MVP. Which, again, is an individual award, and we hate to... But players today, Tim, it's a lot of it's about the individual awards. I mean, I saw a quote from James Harden this year, who's never won anything. He said, I revolutionized the game, but I didn't win a championship. And I'm thinking, how did he revolutionize the game? I couldn't.
If you don't win a championship, yeah.
You know, I mean, he went to the foul line a lot in his peak years and all that stuff. And he traveled a lot, and it was never called. And he averaged 30, 35 points a game. But I don't know how he revolutionized. I think of Michael Jordan. I think of Magic Johnson. I think of you know, Larry Bird and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But I don't think that Harden revolutionized the game.
Well, Mike, the only thing that I could think of was he was the first guy that really sported a real bushy beard on the court.
Right.
Anybody with a beard as thick as this.
So that's right.
I think he brought the unshaven look in the NBA.
It didn't slow him down either, I think. It didn't. The beard, you know, the wind didn't go through the beard and slow him down. His peak years was very good.
Get a lot of defenders away from him.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, Mike.
You have a lot of ties in Philadelphia. If you're a 76ers fan right now, I guess you'd be rooting for the Eagles to win the whole thing.
I am.
Right?
That complex, have you seen that complex down there, either one of you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It is an amazing complex.
Oh, those three, and the three venues right there, you know, it's just incredible. And the Metro gets there, you the South Philly, whatever it's called, it's just incredible.
Yeah, it's great. Right now, it's a great time to be a Philly fan. But it's also a good time to be a Boston fan. You got the Bruins playing like crazy.
Yep.
The Celtics in first.
All right.
So not too bad.
My next assignment for you then has to do with that. It has to do with you've done some traveling in your career. I want you to point out a special place or two that you have visited, like Madison Square Garden or,
sure,
you know, the Omni or wherever it might have been. And I want a full report. I want an anecdote on that.
That'll be fun. That will be fun.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Mike, we'll see you. Let's see. It's not a holiday next Monday, so we should be doing this again next week.
And Tim, wish you well next week, too. And Rick.
Thank you.
See you, and talk to you.
All right.
All right, Mike. Be well. Take care.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Good night. That is Mike Grenier, who is our basketball insider. Just an incredible, incredible amount of experience. And Tim, I'd ask the same of you. You can join, because I'm gonna mention my favorite place too. And maybe you know, in your travels over the years, you could mention whether it's a baseball field or a stadium or wherever it might be.
Okay, I can round up a couple of places.
Yeah, I haven't been to that many, but I've been to a couple. All right, Coach, we'll end it right here. Have a good week, and we'll talk next Monday.
Thank you, my friend. You as well.
All right.
And hello to the wife, Mommy.
Absolutely. You do the same for me, to yours. And be safe and be well, Tim. Good night.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye. That is Tim Kearns, our ambassador of goodwill and our super sports analyst. Don't forget, you've got the Salem Sports Writers, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast tomorrow, hosted by Bill Newell, and that will be dropping at around 8 o'clock. They've got all kinds of tremendous information. And then at the end of the week, on Thursday, or near the end of the week, Thursday, it's the Sports Desk, the North Shore Sports Desk, and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukuru. More high school sports information and local and other sports information as well. Right here on MSO News Sports, and we're so happy that the sports desks are part of what we do now. They do a tremendous job and get out a lot of information, and it's all positive. We keep it positive, for the most part, except when we talk about the pros. That's a little different. You understand. All right, that's it. On behalf of Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, Bill Proposky, and myself, this is MSO News Sports. Be well. Do the right thing. Bye-bye.